This is The Takeaway. I'm Melissa Harris-Perry in for Tanzina Vega. And if you receive this invitation from someone you only met a day ago...
Hey, last month I went dancing at this cute spot in Florida where my roommate's girl made like 5 G's a night. My roommate just told me that he going out there tomorrow and he asked me if I had any friends that want to make some money and you the first I thought of.
Well, you should probably go ahead and say, thanks, but no thanks. That's at least one of the conclusions readers were able to draw from the uber-viral 2015 Twitter thread by Asia King, who goes by Zola. Now, for those of you unfamiliar with that thread, let's just say the trip to Florida did not go as planned, and the roommate you heard mentioned in that clip was actually a pimp who tried to force Zola to engage in sex work. Now, this week, a movie adaptation of the Twitter thread entitled Zola is out in theaters. Directed by Janixa Bravo and starring Taylor Page as Zola, this movie captures the original thread in all its absurdity and horror. One of the film's biggest surprises is character actor Coleman Domingo as the so-called roommate. Now you might know Domingo and his typically warm presence from movies including If Beale Street Could Talk and Ma Rainey's Black Bottom. But in this role, he's capturing something much more sinister.
I think that I've been in the canon of very sort of loving Black fathers and men and advisors, you name it. And I think this is going to be a real swing for people to see me in this role. What did you think? Am I terrifying you?
And to be honest, even though he's kind of ridiculously charming in real life, after watching the movie, I was kind of terrified to talk with him. I spoke with Domingo about why he took Bravo up on her offer to play this intimidating role.
It's fun, but it's also an incredible challenge. What I thought was, to be very honest, even when Janixa asked me to play that role, I just thought, well, what has she seen that would even remotely make her think of me for this role? And I guess, you know, I think that she knows that I'm a character actor through and through, but also that I wanted to humanize this character. So I think that was a huge challenge, like to humanize a character that you know does awful, degrading things, especially to women. And I don't know, to find something about him that's charming, that is loving, and I don't know. So I thought that was a great challenge for me. So there was anything like that is a fun challenge where I'm like, okay, I have to go into the heart of some darkness, but also find out what makes them tick and what makes them human. And so that's what I thought the undertaking was. So I don't know. I wanted to find out what was his dreams, what did he want. Once I found out he was also Nigerian, I was like, oh, okay, I can look at it from the point of view as an immigrant story. And maybe this is what he has to have agency in the world. And he wants what everyone else wants. This is just his access point. He has no other way of attaining the American dream, but he wants it like everyone else. So that's the only way to make him human. And because otherwise, if I judged him from the outside or as he is in the story or as pretty much he was as a human being, I would think not the best things about him.
But I can see your point about the access into his humanity through the immigrant story, because it's the moment when he asks everyone to say his name and ensures that his name is said and is said well and is said right. And I thought, you helped me to see what's in that moment.
Yeah. Absolutely. I think he wants to be acknowledged. He wants what everyone else wants. And he's like, I'm sure he said, I've told you my name before again and again, and no one can ever say it. Think about that. I know that I'm always very particular about how people always put an E in my name. And I'm just like, you know, that's not my name. And that's, you know, not to sound like, you know, Tina Turner, where you're like, all I have is my name. You know?
But it is true, and in fact, the producers may be laughing as they listen along, because it is both one of the greatest challenges that I have as a monolinguistic speaker who only speaks English, but also wants to have, you know, diversity in our show. And I'm always like, I will go to bed repeating the names of my guests, trying to be sure I get them right, and will still get them wrong, because, you know, the American tongue is fat and lazy, and and a little bit pitiful on these things.
You said it. That's the truth. Well, it's like we don't usually have to think about it. You know, I mean, we're dealing with Bobs and Michaels and Johns. We don't have to really deal with, you know, like I personally, when I went to Amsterdam for the first time, I was so confused just even looking at, you know, names of streets. I was like, okay, because we don't usually have that in our language, you know, so I get it. I'm a lazy American too.
So talk to me about, because one of the places that can be most lazy is Hollywood, particularly in its representation of Black folk. So talk to me about what you are looking for in a script, in a character.
Oh, well, what a wonderful question. I think I'm always just looking at complexity. I wanted to look at a character that is flawed. They don't have to be just in good people. I think that people are very complex. And I think one minute they say one thing and then they mean another. I'm looking for complexity, especially when it comes to the canon of African-American men that I've played or will play. I never want to do this sort of the easy version of it. You can see that pretty quickly in a script. And the blessing is I've been on this show, Fear the Walking Dead, for 7 seasons now. And my showrunners really listen to me because they know that I'm just really trying to look at the complexities of a character and for him to never be monolithic, for him to be daring and to not just be, a morally genuine, loving, kind person. I'm like, nah, there's all shades of gray. And don't be afraid of that because I'm African-American. But lean into the complexities of a man. So I'm always just looking for that with any script, to be honest. With any script that I look for something that'll scare me, to be honest. Something that I have not played before. Something that I think will change me, will also move me, and help me see someone else's point of view. That's what's interesting to me. Instead of sort of like a rehashing, you can see it pretty quickly when you see a rehashing of something that they want. For a minute, I honestly thought that people were trying to turn me into, not to say anything against this wonderful, wonderful, legendary actor, but, you know, sort of that voice of God, that Morgan Freeman. People get obsessed with that. You have a great voice, Coleman. You're a soothing presence. You're, in a way, sometimes I feel like non-threatening. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And I think that, so I sort of push against that and sort of make choices to make sure that they're a very complex human being, you know?
Well, Zola will help with you being non-threatening. I think that will assist.
It's a good gentle assist. I think that's great. You know, I think a character like X, I think in the hands of another actor sometimes could have just been set up as a trope. He could just, you know, you can just get obsessed with being the villain and playing all the dark notes of this character and not humanizing him. And I thought that's, you know, I've seen those tropes of, you know, pimps and thugs and hood dudes who are just trying to get by and make some money and do terrible things. But I thought like, oh, there's more notes to that. And I think that will shine a light on who we are as human beings and make sure that we're more, we can see each other. I can see something of myself in X. And I think any brother who thinks, oh, I have nothing to do with this guy, you can see that he has wants and needs like anybody else.
Can you say a little bit more? I was intrigued when you said, my showrunners listen to me. Last week, we had a conversation about Hollywood and about writers' rooms and about how frequently folks are actually not listened to, are ignored, or are just put into a single category. You know, you've been on the show for a while. Did that listening happen over time, or is that kind of the culture of that space?
You know what? I think our showrunners, I think I've been very blessed with, it started out with Dave Erickson, who really wrote to my strengths. He created this character specifically. I don't think that he was meant for an African-American actor. He seemed like he was straight out of Shakespeare. He was like Richard III, and I love language, and I just sort of like came in with that love and passion for it. And then he wrote towards me in many ways. I think a good smart showrunner will see, will get to know their cast and see where their strengths are and where their weaknesses are and sort of write towards or challenge those things. And so in every single way, in shape and form, I wanted to make sure that they knew that, yes, Victor Strand is a character that may not specifically have been written as a Black man, but I am a Black man. And his Blackness will have to be a part of it. in some way. I know that, to be very honest, I know even like in season six, my wardrobe supervisor started to notice that my character, I would sort of like bring his hat to the side just a little bit at times. I said, well, that's the way he wears his hat. It's not just straight up on his head. I said, he's making a statement about his identity. So he cocks it a little to his side. His roots are from the East Coast and from, you know, urban America. And I'm like, we need to see some of that sometimes. And they're not afraid of it, which is great. I think for us, I'm sure they don't lean into it in the beginning, but I sort of have to do my work and sort of like be a collaborator in that way. I think as long as we are, there's a forum where you can, you know, speak your truth and question the process. And my showrunners have been very open. I mean, you know, they hand me the pen at times and say, what do you think it is? I say, well, I think he has to say this and it has to be about that. And they listen and they incorporate my notes and thoughts. And I think that's what my responsibility is as an actor as well. That you, I come from the theater. So it means you just, you give over everything. I don't need writing credit. I don't need any sort of credits. I'm like, what it is, we're trying to create the, we're trying to make the sausage together. You know what I mean? And we need everyone's hands on deck. So I've been listened to, which is great. But also I think I even teach this. I know how to raise a question or collaborate without it feeling like I'm imposing. I feel like they know that I'm coming from a place of love and generosity, and I'm just trying to make it the best that it can be. And they hear it as such, you know? The people who don't hear it, I think, have some ego issues. And luckily, I haven't had that on my set, you know?
It is one of my favorite things about being in any aspect of media is that collaborative production, right? That you talk about theater there, and there's that sense, okay, the audience sees the actors on stage or maybe on screen, but there's so, that's the tip of the iceberg, right? Most of it is actually happening beyond the purview of the audience.
Absolutely. It's all happening in the purview of the audience. I think that's where I find, that's where I have my most joy, to be honest, is when we're creating the thing before anyone else sees it. And we're wrestling with language, we're wrestling with character, every costume detail. You're giving up, you give over everything to it without wanting credit for it. Because you're like, I just want to, it doesn't matter to me who came up with that moment or that idea. It is just, you absorb it all and then you perform it. And I think it's a beautiful thing.
Now, you have another film that is on the horizon that, again, might help with this non-threatening situation. You're starring in the upcoming Candyman movie. Can you talk to me a little bit about this?
I can. A recent trailer just came out, and I think it's phenomenal because it really centers on the story of Candyman. And you can tell with my voiceover that it, my character sort of... I don't know. He's sort of like, you know, holding up the story and the legend of Candyman. So my character was written for me by Jordan Peele. And he wanted me to be this neighborhood guy who sort of, I think, who holds the trauma of the neighborhood in some way. I think he's just raising questions of like, you know, of gentrification, of people coming in and not understanding all the things that have went down in the neighborhood. And basically sort of saying, you know, you can come, I know you, this location is sexy and wonderful and you want it now, but you can't just have the location without having the trauma as well, that's important for gentrification. I think that's what he's saying. So I think that's saying something without saying everything, but I think that that's sort of the impulse of my character.
I find Jordan Peele's mind, at least as it's presented through his films, to be brilliant and completely terrifying. I'm wondering about, you've had this opportunity to work with really eclectic Black directors, some of the best in the business. Tell me a little bit about what those collaborations have been like for you.
You know what they are? They are really, I'm just thinking, the moment you said that, I thought of Jenixa Bravo, Nia DaCosta, you know, these people who are saying, Coleman, we want what you bring and we want you to help challenge this as well. And they're not afraid of my mind as well. Because when I come onto any project, people know that you're going to get a dramaturg, you're going to get a full collaborator. I'm not just going to hit my marks and just say the lines, but I'm going to help question and wrestle with this to make it the best that it can be. I'm going to use every skill that I have because that's what I've always believed that's what was required. So I think I don't know, it feels like you can make some magic and you feel like you can challenge the way we're represented on film. That's what I think. I get that with, you know, even like, you know, with more senior directors like George C. Wolfe. George is the director who's been doing this for so many years. But when I tell you, he gets down on the floor and he's sort of playing with clay, and he's always willing to challenge and wrestle and really, I don't know, elevate. But also not be afraid to be guttural with our experience as well, that we are all things, that we are not just one, but we are, we're not just Cosby's and we're not just good times, but we're all of it in between, you know?
When I think of us being all things, I just want to return to this really lovely GQ profile from earlier in the year, detailing how you fell in love with your husband and how you first saw each other at a Walgreens and then, you know, found each other through the Craigslist missed connections posters. Like, this is not normally how this goes down.
No.
So I want to know, is this going to be a film? Are we going to get to watch this someday on the screen?
The funny thing is when, after we had this chance meeting 17 years ago, I actually wrote about it. I wrote a short story about it, and it was called something like Two Birds, One with Green Eyes, One with Open Hands, because there were some significant things that happened on our first date, and I thought of him as a bird. And a bird with open hands, because when he sat down, I noticed that he didn't sit with his hands on his palms down. He sat with his palms up. And it was the first time I've ever seen anybody do that. And I thought, look at that. That's a real open human being. He's so open to the world. I don't know if it'll be.
It's a revolutionary position, palms up, because it means you can't be typing on a keyboard. You can't be, you know, laboring in a particular way. It's a very yogic position.
I think so. And it's something that I was so taken with him, and he really, I mean, I think that we've, I mean, honestly, the way we met truly was magic. I do believe that the divine resides. I believe there's magic and you just have to look for it. And I know that that's how I got the love of my life. We met, like I said, it was a chance meeting and then a follow-up on a Craigslist missed connections when I wasn't, he placed the ad and 2 hours later I found it, but I was looking for a used computer. And then I just went to that. Yeah, and then I just went to that profile, that site, because I thought, I wonder, I can't stop thinking about this interaction. And then he posted an ad for me. And then we met up 2 days later. I told him I loved him that night. And we've been together for 17 years now. And so that's the thing that I know. When people are like, did that really happen? I'm like, yeah, it did. But I do believe, I am one of those people that believe in magic. I really do. I believe that there's love. Love is available. You just have to have your eyes open. You can't be on a computer screen. You got to be out with your heart open. And that's the only way it happens. That's what I think.
Your heart open and maybe your hands open as well. Thank you for that beautiful story.
You're welcome, Melissa.
Coleman Domingo is one of the stars of Zola, and you have not seen him like this before. It's in theaters this week. Thank you so much for joining me today.
You're very welcome. This was wonderful. Thank you.
I'm Ira Flatow, host of Science Friday. For over 30 years, our team has been reporting high-quality news about science, technology, and medicine. News you won't get anywhere else. And now that political news is 24/7, our audience is turning to us to know about the really important stuff in their lives. Cancer, climate change, genetic engineering, childhood diseases. Our sponsors know the value of science and health news. For more sponsorship information, visit sponsorship.wnyc.org.